Welcome to High Latitude Healthy. I'm your host, Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. If you live anywhere in the U.S. besides Hawaii, we have cutting-edge science to share with you that can improve your health. Here's to living high latitude healthy. Hello, I'm Dr. Eileen Karpfinger. Welcome to High Latitude Healthy. Today, I have on our show an esteemed guest. His name is Howard Lutnick. Is that right?
Martin.
Howard Martin, Executive Vice President of HeartMath, as he discusses the profound connection between heart, mind, and body. Howard Martin is the president or vice president of HeartMath, and HeartMath is something that has been close to my heart for about 28 years, and he can tell us all about it and what the science is. Welcome, Howard.
Aline, thanks for having me on your program. 28 years. Wow, you go back almost to the beginning of us. We started HeartMath 36 years ago. So you're an early person into the HeartMath universe.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, it didn't hurt that it was close at the time. My partner and I would come surfing down that way, and it's nice to know HeartMath is in the Santa Cruz Hills still.
We sure are doing well, thriving. Lots of new things happening at HeartMath. We're going through the biggest growth cycle in the history of our organization.
Wow.
Which is very rare in that you have a mature organization like ours that's been doing this work for, as I mentioned, 36 years.
Yeah. You've been ahead of your time, I think.
Well, we've made a big footprint in the world, and we've accomplished a lot. We've retold the story of heart from both the psychological and physiological level. And a lot of organizations would probably stop right there and say, we've done a lot, we've made our contribution, and now we're sort of rotted out, but not here. You know, we've chosen growth. The evolutionary spiral of HeartMath continues to unfold. And so we're in the middle of it right now. It's a very exciting time for us.
So exciting. Tell our listeners what HeartMath is, please.
Well, HeartMath basically is a system consisting of techniques, methods, interesting concepts, all underpinned with scientific research. It's designed to really help people reconnect with the power and intelligence of the heart, and then utilize that in very practical, pragmatic ways in how they live their life, how they walk in the world. Now, in the beginning of HeartMath, we were introducing a heart-based system into what would be often a very heartless world. And we also knew that heart had been talked about and revered for so many years, thousands of years, actually, and that for us to introduce a new system based on heart, we had to do it a bit differently. So rather than just leaving it in the philosophical tenets that people believe in about heart, we use science to build a bridge between that innate understanding that people have and the practical living that we felt heart needed to be applied in. The reason we chose science, Eileen, is that, you know, as you would know, being a doctor, you know, science carries a lot of weight. When something is proven to be true through empirical science, it increases the power of belief. Science says, and therefore, now I can believe. And we wanted people to believe in something they already had inside, which is their own heart. It's sort of getting written off, you know, and not really being utilized with consistency. So science was the bridge, and we've done a lot of it. The research now has over, I think it's between 400 and 500 peer-reviewed research studies with HeartMath.
Wow.
There are over 10,000 sightings of HeartMath research and other HeartMath literature. And we've covered a wide spectrum from understanding the physical heart all the way into today's research, understanding the interconnectivity between all living systems, between us and people and animals, plants, the whole thing, you know, showing that we're really all connected. For me, it's been a fun ride. I've had an opportunity to be a part of this, to have been and still am close friends with HeartMath's founder, a man named Doc Childry. And when we started out, Eileen, we had nothing really. We didn't have investment capital. We didn't have business plans. We didn't have that type of sophistication. We have all of that now, of course, but in the beginning we didn't. But what we had was a belief. A belief based on our own personal experience of when you connect to the values of the heart and you begin to manifest those proactively, that life will change right on down to your physical health. And so we had that belief and we wanted to share it. And so we started out with very little and we built it from there. I have been a part of it since its inception. And certainly my life has been enriched dramatically. I can't imagine what my life would have been if I hadn't done this. So it's been a fun ride for me.
So again, let's explain some of the nuts and bolts as to what you, how you bridge the knowledge and the experience with our listeners.
Well, we started out, we could have started out a lot of different places, but we started out with a physical heart. And what we found was, is that scattered throughout the research literature, but not organized, was a different understanding about what the physical heart was doing. Obviously, we know it's a cardiovascular organ and it's pumping blood. It does it better than any pump that's ever been invented. But we felt it was doing more, and we found out, in fact, it was. What we were able to discover and then put into a coherent story is that the heart is actually an information processing center in our bodies. It is sending information everywhere to the brain throughout the entire system, and that our physiological functions are all dependent upon the signals coming from the heart. We map that out. We're able to determine and show how it's actually doing that. And there are four ways that we were able to see that the heart is communicating with the brain and the rest of the body. I'd be happy to describe those briefly if you'd
please,
like. Okay.
Please.
The first is neurological. Your heart has a nervous system. It's actually studied through a medical field called neurocardiology. Next to the brain, it's the most sophisticated part of our nervous system. It exists in the heart. That nervous system is communicating through a nerve pathway that originates in the heart and then travels up, goes into the brain, goes in through the lower brain centers, the medulla, continues on into the mid-level brain, the limbic system, where a lot of our emotional processing takes place, and then goes all the way up and terminates in the neocortex, higher perceptual centers in our brain. Now, what gets interesting, Eileen, is that when researchers map out neurological traffic in our bodies, it's clearly seen that the heart is sending more information to the brain by far than it's receiving from the brain. The heart's receiving timing information from the brain, but that's about it. Most of the information is going this way. And so brain function is critically dependent upon this neurological communication that's taking place with the heart. The second way is through something called our blood pressure wave. When the heart pumps, and it squeezes and pushes a wave of energy out that takes the blood and pushes it through the veins and the arteries. And of course, blood gets to everywhere in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That means the blood pressure wave is going to every place in our body. It actually gets there a few milliseconds before the blood does. Now, the blood pressure wave will constantly fluctuate and change depending upon how the heart is beating, the rhythmic patterns that the heart is beating in. The blood pressure wave is corresponding to that. Blood pressure waves are influencing all of our major glands and organs in our body. As the blood pressure wave changes, different parts of our biological functions begin to change. A great example of that is that the electrical activity in our brain is synchronized to the blood pressure wave. So as the blood pressure wave changes, electrical activity in the brain changes as well. And that's called a biophysical communication.
Okay.
Now here's one of those points that was out there, but nobody knew. It's a hormonal or biochemical communication that the heart.
This is number three?
Number three, yeah.
Okay.
In 1983, all the way back then, the heart was actually reclassified as being not only a cardiovascular organ, but a hormonal gland. The reason is they discovered it was producing significant amounts of very important hormones. One was DHEA, which, as you know, and maybe your listeners know, is generically often called the anti-aging hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Another, which many people know about, is called oxytocin. Oxytocin is a regenerative hormone that's often called the love hormone because it's produced in greater mm-hmm. amounts when we're in loving states, when we have that type of emotion going on. Mm-hmm. Like, let's say a mother. With her baby.
And her baby, yeah.
When we're petting a dog, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, or when we're in a trusting situation with someone. I've seen studies on that. Oxytocin is very difficult to measure, but from what measurements have been done, they believe that the heart is one of the major, if not the most major producer of oxytocin in our body.
Nice.
And there's our third way. Now, these three ways are what I call hardwired biological communication pathways. Well documented, well researched, well understood. No ambiguity about this. It's for real. It's real research. It's real understanding about the heart. The fourth way, however, is where for me it gets really more interesting and very cool. It's an energetic communication. Your heart is an electrical organ. It's producing bioelectricity, the strongest source of bioelectricity in our bodies. When we go to a doctor, for example, and they say, "Now, Mr. Martin, I'm going to do your electrocardiogram. They're going to measure the electrical signal being produced by my heart, see the QRS, the reading, and then determine something about the physical characteristics of my heart. Well, it turns out that it produces enough electricity that it creates a magnetic field. That magnetic field surrounds us in 360 degrees. And measured with the most conservative equipment that's used to measure magnetic fields, it's called magnetometers. It can be detected about 3 feet or 1 meter outside of our body. So we have this field surrounding us in 360 degrees, radiating out into space about 3 feet. Now, magnetic fields contain information. I'll use an analogy to explain that. Your cell phone. Your cell phone is producing a magnetic field. You imprint that magnetic field with information. It could be the phone call, could be the picture, could be a text, but you're imprinting that magnetic field with information. It's sent and amplified via cell towers, and then the person you send it to, their phone and its magnetic field are picking up that information. Now, the heart's field is being imprinted with our emotional state. We are literally imprinting that field with what we're feeling inside. And you can analyze that. There's an analysis process called spectral analysis. You basically take a snapshot of the field in a given point in time. You can look at the frequencies in that field and you can see the patterns of the frequencies. What we found was really interesting. When we are feeling a stressful emotion, strong negative emotion, let's say we're frustrated or we're angry or we're worried, those kind of emotions, what we've seen is an incoherent field. The frequencies in the field is called an incoherent spectra. They're fighting. There's no order. It's like they're competing for the available power. And that's kind of like how frustration feels when you feel that way. Conversely, when the emotional state has changed and the person is now feeling, let's say, gratitude, appreciation for the good things in their life, maybe the love or the care for someone or something, that field will change. And very often, when someone is feeling a sustained emotion like that, we see what's called a coherent spectra. It's a harmonic sequence. The frequencies are working together harmoniously. They're not fighting, they're working together. Why is this important? Well, we're broadcasting it. We're broadcasting it, first of all, to every single cell in our bodies. We're bathing ourselves in our own magnetic field. That's one thing. But also, we're imprinting the field and it's being broadcast out into space. So, we have a communication that's happening in an unseen level, which many people have experienced. They sense things in others. They sense something beyond the words or beyond the body language. It's a feeling that they're getting. Well, that's one way to explain that because we are communicating energetically through the field produced by the heart. Now, many scientists propose that the field is much bigger than 3 feet. That it's measurable at 3 feet with magnetometers. It drops off very quickly. But the implications of research going on now is that the field is almost infinite in a way. If you begin to look at it through the lens of quantum physics, and for you and for you, the listener, I'll certainly let you know I'm not an expert on quantum physics. But I do know this. I do know in quantum physics, it's a different set of rules. You remove some of the traditional barriers of time and space, for example. Newtonian physics lays out. So the heart's field, looked at through that lens, is connecting to energetic systems on this planet and beyond. And My belief, and this is a non-scientific statement now, so please bear with me on that. I believe it's our connection to what I would call our larger self. You know, that true higher self that is really beyond our personality and the logical linear thinking that we use reliably in daily life. It connects us to something bigger.
Yeah, I'm picturing a plasma field. I talk about this on my show. The air between you and I is invisible, but it's conscious. It's consciousness. We're trying to figure out where consciousness is. And if our toroidal field of the heart is perhaps magnetically sensed in our current technology, 3 feet away in every direction, I feel like there's an internet of sorts in the plasmic field that connects us to all things. And I think what you describe, and we'll get into this deeper with what HeartMath is doing, what we're doing with our hearts when we can be in a state of what would you call it, cohesion, that we are broadcasting that into this greater field.
I agree. And I think you're right on it. And it's like, there's a lot going on there in the unseen levels that we're connecting to through different fields and all that. And I think connecting to that better part of ourselves, to where more intuitive intelligence becomes practical, or it's all happening through the heart.
I just saw a study this morning that there was a box where no light could get in, and they put a plant in the middle of the room, and they had one light that was shining in. I'm presuming it was an incandescent light because the plant was needing that light. And the light was now systematically going through all the different areas of the room, and the computer was notifying or noting where in the room that that light was shining. And after about a day, the light focused more on the plant than it did on the rest of the room by a significant study done, because the plant did the changing of the computer. It didn't, it's not like the computer just did it by itself. The plant made the computer do that by its own living force. It made the light shine more on itself than it did the empty room. Mm-hmm. And I figure that was a good analogy of some of what HeartMath's impact is it shapes our world when we have the coherence that you teach in HeartMath.
Yeah, I want to come back to that, to coherence, but I want to also share something that you brought it up. I think you and your listeners may find interesting. You know, one of the areas of research that has been done in HeartMath in the last few years is around looking at the connection between us and plants, for example. And the reason for that, let me first preface that and say, it's not just because we want to do cool research and come up with some interesting facts. This is really keep building that bridge of understanding of connectedness, and the connectedness that we need to amplify so that our lives are better, less stressful, you know, more connected to, you know, our purpose, things like that. So that it's not a woo-woo kind of an approach to this. It's really trying to provide some belief and understanding that can help mm-hmm. people. But we've done research on trees, and trees produce electrical energy as well. Mm-hmm. And so our scientists developed technology to measure that and place them on trees. And they have a network of these things all around the world, looking at different trees and the electrical output of trees, correlating that to things that are happening in the world, to planetary influencers and so on. One interesting study that they did fairly recently was there were 4 trees in a yard at HeartMath. Mm-hmm. And they had a group of people, 8 people for, I think, 5 days, who sat in proximity of those trees and sent their love and care to one particular tree.
Oh.
And what we found was is that the electrical output of that tree did, in fact, increase and change, whereas it did not with the other trees. That experiment was then repeated, and it was done non-locally, which means that a group of people, hundreds around the world, were brought into the experiment, and they were instructed to send their love to a picture of this one tree sitting in the middle of these other trees, but this mm-hmm. one tree, and to focus on that. And we saw the same thing happen. We saw that the electrical output of that particular tree that had people focusing on it actually increased and the other trees did not, which is pretty interesting, that this is happening non-locally and that the tree is actually responding to the love and the care of the people who are focusing on it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So that's one thing.
Yeah. I wonder if you watch that tree for weeks after, if it shared it with the other trees.
I don't know. Perhaps it did.
I bet. Okay, so I remember a bunch of years ago, you might know when this technology was with HeartMath. There was a laptop, and I was at your center. I brought my dad, who's since passed, and my dad had done some work around having migraines where he went to a lab and studied how to warm up his hand as a way to take the heat from his head and warm up his hand. So I brought him to the HeartMath Institute to show him what it was from Wisconsin. And you had a computer system where I don't remember where the device went, but it was somehow detecting my heart. And I remember a game where I was helping moving a hot air balloon, and if I had a coherent heart resonance, the balloon would go up. And so that was great. I was like concentrating. I'm like, oh, the balloon's going up. And then you give it challenges by moving the balloon towards, like, I remember there being a barn, and I was now starting to panic because the balloon's heading towards the barn on the computer screen, and I'm supposed to be heart coherent, but I'm starting to get fearful. And that was the challenge, was to figure out how to stay coherent so that my balloon could rise up over the barn. And sure enough, my balloon hit the barn instead of going over it.
Yeah.
Do you remember that technology?
Yeah, we started having first of all, I'll explain what we're measuring. It's measuring
Okay,
heart
great.
rhythms and coherence, but I will say that the technology you experienced was our first version was laptops, computer-based programs measuring coherence and training people how to increase it. That today still exists. It's called M-Wave, EMWAVE Pro, and it's primarily used by clinicians. Therapists, counselors, psychologists, doctors use that particular program in their office. We've expanded that technology greatly since then, and it's primarily now an app with the sensor that you get that connects to the app, and it's being used by tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people around the world. It's our most prominent product, and it's called the HeartMath app, and the sensor is the Coherence Plus Pro, and so that's not a promotional gesture. It's just explaining out, where this has actually gone. So the technology has been very important for HeartMath. What we're measuring is what's called coherence. When the heart-brain-body communication that I talked about earlier is synchronized and working well, we enter a different physiological and psychological state, and that is called coherence. Coherence is a state where all the major body systems are working together. They're synchronized. So that means from everything like digestion, respiration, immune system response, hormonal response, brain function, boom, it syncs. It's a very healthy state. It's also a very high performance state. Less energy is being wasted. The body is in much more of a flow state. And so that is the physiological effect of coherence. Psychologically, coherence is kind of naturally triggered, Eileen, when we are experiencing what I will call a regenerative, uplifting emotion. When you're looking out in your yard that I see in the background, you're appreciating those trees, and you actually feel the appreciation for the trees, your system would naturally head more towards coherence, for example. Once people do consciously, especially get into the coherent state, those type of emotions become more readily available. They flow. It's easier for us to move beyond the stress and strain of living and the chaos and confusion and experience a bit more care for someone or something, or more love, or more appreciation, or more kindness, more dignity, more honor, more courage. These kind of heart qualities begin to become more readily accessible. So there's your psychological shift. It's triggered by, but also accompanied by, sustained regenerative emotions. Now, here's how you measure coherence. You're looking at heart rhythms. The name for that is actually heart rate variability analysis. Now, when you go to a doctor and a doctor says your heart rate's 75 beats a minute, I never questioned that. My assumption was, without thinking about it much, is my heart was beating in this steady rhythm of 75 beats.
Like a clock. Yeah.
Never true. The heart is constantly changing speed. It's fluctuating all the time. Now, my little hand movements, moving my little finger, it's all affecting the rhythmic beating patterns of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, scientists and medical professionals thought that heart rate variability was what they call an involuntary response. It was something that was only happening through movement, through the body's movement. And it's supposed to do that. The heart's got to be able to pump blood in very nuanced ways, depending upon what we're doing.
Right.
What we were able to prove, and we published this in the American Journal of Cardiology in 1994, was that our emotional state was influencing heart rhythms. And we've done many, many experiments. You can have someone in our research labs. They are not moving intentionally. We tell them not to. And we're measuring their heart rhythms, heart rate variability. And we ask them to experience, let's say, a feeling of frustration. And when they do, without any body movement going on, the heart rhythms become very chaotic. The heart is speeding up and slowing down very irregularly. And when that pattern is happening because of an emotion, not because of a movement, it's putting a lot of wear and tear on the nervous system. It's also taxing the heart itself.
Mm-hmm.
Those irregular rhythmic patterns begin to change heart-brain-body communication. The signals going from heart back to brain become more chaotic and begins to shut down the higher perceptual centers of the brain. It also triggers the release of hormones that we don't want too many of. I would say you would agree, we don't want too much cortisol.
Sure.
We don't want too much adrenaline, you know, so those hormones get triggered off these heart rhythms. In these many, many experiments and detailed studies, and we say, okay, now shift your emotions. Now, don't try not to feel frustrated right now. Instead, once you feel appreciation or gratitude or care, immediately, instantaneously, the heart rhythms change. Now they become smooth and ordered. They're speeding up. They reach an apex. They begin to slow back down. And you see a wave. It's like a sine wave that's going on in the heart rhythms. The opposite effect is occurring in the body. The nervous system is benefiting from that. So is the physical heart. It's triggering the release of hormones into the body that we talked about earlier, like oxytocin, DHEA, and the signals going back to the brain are opening up the higher perceptual centers of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
All that is happening when we make that emotional shift. Now, that smooth sine wave-like pattern that I described is what coherence looks like. And so a lot of our training programs and our technology are all designed to help people make that shift to increase their coherence and experience a lot of benefits. The coherent state is very active. It's very aware, but yet it also feels calm.
Right.
It's not just a sleepy time or meditative type of state where you're pulling out of everything. You're very engaged in the coherent state, but it has a smoothness to it. It's not the engagement where it feels edgy, you know.
Right.
It is good physically. It's good for your health. It does create that feeling of connection with yourself, first of all, but then connection with others, you know. And all that is changing. It lifts the spirit. It feels good. And the highly coherent state opens the door for more of a different type of thinking and intelligence. I'll call it intuitive intelligence.
Mm.
So measuring coherence is done through looking at heart rhythms. The goal in looking at that is learning how to increase them. So our techniques are all designed to help people increase coherence. And then you're retraining your system. You're creating what we call a new coherence baseline. You don't walk around in a state of measurable high coherence all the time. The body's moving. It's doing stuff. We're talking. We're on the phone. We're on the Zoom call, you know. But it creates a new baseline to where your natural coherence state is now at a higher level.
And your threshold to where you would be in a state of crisis seems to go up to where you don't experience it as much, correct?
Absolutely. You buffer a lot of the incoming stress. We haven't talked about stress yet, but it is one of the central problems in the world today that many people are experiencing. When we're in a higher coherent state, the perceived stressful events of life bother us less.
Yes.
Additionally, we're going to go through stress. Let's just tell it like it is. It's a part of living. But our ability to recover from it and to regain poise and balance also increases. In other words, if the baseline of coherence is higher, the journey back to it is shorter.
Right.
You can get back to it more quickly. So when we have a trigger and we get stressed about something, you know, it could be financial, it could be relationships, it could be in our job, it could be, you know, looking at world events, any of those things that create the stressful perceptions and patterns in us. When we know how to get back to coherence, we can buffer that some.
Right.
Also, I'm going to use one more analogy because I think it's important to illustrate your point. When we're in a higher coherent state, we move some of the stress out of the way before it even gets to us. The analogy that I like to use is a snow plow. You know what a snow plow is? It's a pointed metal on the front of a truck, right? Mm-hmm. And when there's snow on the ground, it moves and pushes the snow out of the way. Now, the snow's still there. The stress is still there. But the snow plow is moving it off to the side so that you can proceed forward. So one of the goals of life, I think, is to move some of that stress off to the side so we can continue to move forward in the fulfillment that we all want and all have, that the stress is getting in the way of. Coherence acts as that snowplow in a way that helps us with that.
Yeah. So if you were in a stressful state, to take a moment to be in coherence allows you to perhaps have a greater view of what you need to do.
You can see more effective solutions. You know, when we're in a stressful state, our brains aren't even functioning well. We don't see the bigger pictures. We don't see the opportunities to change something. It all looks dire. It all looks, you know, hopeless.
Yeah.
Too many people are experiencing that all the time, every day.
Right. Do you have any stories within your community about someone's transformation with HeartMath?
Eileen, to be honest with you, there are thousands. And one of the problems that I'm having right now here is getting all those stories organized. And there's a bigger story to tell at HeartMath because we've touched the lives of so many people. We've been doing this a long time. And there are millions of people a year whose lives are being touched in a positive and meaningful way by HeartMath. And it adds up over time. But we've seen physical improvements in people time and time again, certainly psychological. We've seen marriages being saved. We've seen, you know, conflicts being resolved more quickly.
So give me two stories of just two different cases. Don't give names, of course, but just something that you have permission to share.
I will. I'll give you one big one right now.
Okay.
Every police officer in the Netherlands has been trained in HeartMath.
Oh my goodness.
60,000 police officers.
Wow.
Received a 4-hour HeartMath training as part of a mandatory resilience program for the Dutch police.
Wow.
Now, I have talked to some of those police officers, and they have told me that in moments of crisis, they made important decisions by remembering some of the simple parts of the techniques they had that they feel saved them from making wrong decisions.
Wow.
From making inaccurate assessments of the situation that was going on or responding too much to a situation where it needed a different approach. And they shared that with me.
Wow.
Of the benefits of
that. How long ago was that this happened?
Ongoing. It's been going on for probably, you know, 8 to 10 years, I think. But it's still going on.
I want to see the stats on how many less criminal arrests there have been, how many less violent acts. I mean, there's got to be a change.
There's been a couple of stories. I'll tell you one is I was speaking in Europe in Switzerland, and there was a man who came up to me who was from Austria. And I had shared briefly about that police study. He said, you know, I got to tell you something. He said, I was in the Netherlands not long ago, and I was pulled over for a traffic violation by a police officer. And I explained to him why it happened, what I was doing. And he said, well, you know, I'm not going to give you a ticket because I believe in what you're saying, that you just made an honest mistake. And I've been trained in HeartMath, and and I'm going to just give you a warning this time. He told me that story, right?
That's great.
Physiologically, one of the areas, Eileen, that we've seen improvements is in arrhythmias. Mm. Arrhythmia is the irregular beating pattern of the heart, heart speeding up and slowing down physiologically is malfunctioning, right? Now, we always preference anything about medical conditions by saying that please work with your health practitioner, with your doctor, with your whoever you're working with, to explain to them what you're doing and what's going on and get their recommendations, you know. But we've seen many people be able to reduce or get off of their heart arrhythmia medications, they say, as a result of practicing heart-focused techniques that HeartMath puts out. One of those was an author who's fairly famous. He's deceased now, Dr. Joseph Chilton Pierce.
Oh, I love Dr. Chilton.
He was wonderful.
Pierce.
He came to HeartMath a long time ago and became quite a supporter of what we do. And basically, he was a meditator. And he was part of the I forget the name of him now, but the TM people. And he was a pretty high up in the TM people thing.
Transcendental meditation people.
Transcendental meditation. And he loved it, and he's probably still practice it. But he felt that when he learned to add heart to the process, that's when things began to change. He had severe tachycardia. And practicing heart math techniques improved that tachycardia to where he was finally taken off of his medication. And he publicly said in interviews and things like that, HeartMath saved my life.
Wow.
And so there's a couple of stories, but there's so many, you know.
No kidding.
Another one was a couple that was actually on the Dr. Phil show when he was counseling people, and they had a marriage and big problem in the marriage. And he told them they were hopeless, that they were completely done, and suggested that they go their separate ways.
Oh, goodness.
But in the time when he had a popular show, part of what they did on that show is they would take people who had problems and they refer them somewhere to get additional help and support. They wouldn't just leave them hanging after they exposed them on television, right? And they sent this couple to us. And Dr. Deborah Rosman here, CEO of HeartMath, worked with them and counseled them and coached them. Their marriage was saved. They're extremely happily married today. The man was originally from Iceland. That's where they live. They still stay in touch with us, and they're flourishing.
Oh, fantastic.
That's another story.
Yeah.
A relationship one, a very mainstream police one, and a physiological one. And there are thousands of stories like that.
Great. I'll probably want more here as we go on.
Okay.
Tell us about the technology that you have now that people can get online.
Well, you simply go to your favorite app store and you look for the HeartMath app. And you download
HeartMath
that app.
HeartMath is a nonprofit, right?
Do what?
HeartMath is a nonprofit organization.
Actually, no, we're two organizations. There's HeartMath Incorporated, which is a for-profit company.
Okay.
And there's HeartMath Institute, which is our nonprofit wing.
Got it.
HeartMath Incorporated is the larger of the two entities.
I see.
I am the executive at HeartMath Incorporated.
I see. But okay,
got it. We are two organizations with one mission.
Yeah.
And that's to activate the heart of humanity. You know, so we work together very closely, and we have for decades now. The nonprofit has a little different tone. They do work in what's called the underserved communities. Which would be very often first responders, people like that. They also are the part of our organization that works with education.
Okay.
They have a strong emphasis on young people, on children. You know, and on the for-profit side, we produce the technology. We you know, put that out to the world. And we do many, many things on the for-profit side.
Okay.
So the HeartMath app is what the main technology is today. You can use it without a sensor by subscribing. You subscribe to it, and you can try it for free for a week, but you subscribe to it and you can use the camera on your phone as the sensor. It works quite well, but it's not as optimal as actually having the sensor.
Okay.
There's a sensor that you use with the app that you get off of our website. You know, you'll have that website. It's called the HeartMath Coherence Plus sensor. It attaches to your earlobe, interfaces with the app. It's much more convenient because it's on your earlobe. Your hands are free and you can do longer sessions with it that way. And you use that with the app. And the app measures your heart rate variability. It converts that into a coherence measurement. It tracks all that, scores it, gives you output about it, and also gives you It's a whole performance engine where you're tracking your progress. But what I love about that app, Eileen, is it does more than that. It's a training app as well. There's a button you click on it that says Learn, and there's over 20 hours of heart math learning in that app. Everything from guided techniques to simple exercises to short videos and all the way up to full-blown heart math courses are in the app itself. So I like it because there are many apps out there that measure, and they're really good. And there are many apps out there that where you learn something from them, where they teach you something. But I haven't seen many other apps, if any, really, that are combining learning and measurement in the way that this app particularly does that.
Good
And
training.
that's important to HeartMath. We're not just a measurement company.
Right.
At the core of who we are, we're, I think, a learning company. And we're trying to help people connect with this beautiful, magnificent intelligence they have called heart and apply it in their life to do things like, let's not be chronically stressed all the time. Let's
Right.
reduce that. Let's have a life that's more fulfilling. And the app is just one of the many tools we have, but one of the most widely used ones.
Okay, great. I think I saw a picture of the newer device, the newer monitor thing that it connects to the ear, but then there was something that clipped onto the woman's chest in the picture. What was that clip-on thing? Is that a Bluetooth or is there a way to plug into the phone?
It's probably what you saw is that she's got a, it's on her ear, but she's got a holding it in place with something on her chest. The
Okay.
sensor is Bluetooth, but let me say it's low emission Bluetooth. It's not a strong Bluetooth signal that's going to affect anyone's health. It's low, very, very low. But yeah, you connect it to your shirt, maybe here, you clip it. It goes up on
Is
your ear.
it to detect your heart where you're clipping it?
No.
Okay,
It's
got it.
picking up your heart rhythms through your earlobe. And the reason it's placed there is that there's a really great blood flow in the earlobe. You can do it with your finger on the phone, for example, but there's less blood running through here than there is running through here, believe it or
Sure.
not.
And then do you have a physical plug-in version still?
No. We've
Okay.
moved away from that. I think there's a finger sensor that we still sell that's there. By the way, I'll show you the sensor if you want. Now,
Sure.
the PR agency that's working with me now has told me not to do this, but I'm going to do
Okay.
it for
Well,
you.
this is a radio show, so our listeners can't see it, but I can see it right now and I can describe it. So there it is. I see it. Yeah. And that bigger piece that's in your hand right there,
This
what is
connects to your
that?
shirt or to your
And that's not
clothing.
doing any detecting.
That's not doing any detection. The detection is happening through this sensor, which is the wire connected to this. It goes to my ear, and then it sends a signal via Bluetooth to the app.
Got it.
But that's the way
Okay.
it looks when you have it on.
Yeah. All right. Great. Okay. So you've been with HeartMath since its inception. What are you noticing that is kind of the science is catching up with what HeartMath has been doing all along?
Well, I think that the story we wrote about the heart, rewrote about the heart, has been accepted widely around the world, and I see other organizations, other people, other speakers, other authors that are constantly referring to this in ways, whether they are crediting us or not. Most often they don't, but they're using our language, they're using pieces of that story themselves. And so we have changed the narrative
Yeah.
around that. And again, a lot of the science that we've done, other people have done something similar. So it's not like heart brain body communication is being looked at through some scrutinized view through science. We've made that very clear, and I think that's been proven now that the heart is more than the blood pump thing that I talked about earlier. So that's pretty interesting. The mainstream science has caught up with that,
Right.
and a lot more doctors today understand heart rate variability. Heart rate variability has become more popular. I think we've had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But you see it in other devices now. I was sort of speaking last weekend at a conference, and a man came up to me and said, "Here, I have heart rate variability in my Calm app, for example." And he showed
Yes.
me the graphic. He says, "What's this thing telling me?" And I was able to explain to him, it's just showing the pattern. It's not really analyzing it or giving you much information back about it, but it is tracking it. So a lot of device companies began to utilize heart rate variability analysis as a feature.
Right.
Now, one of the things that's different, and I don't want this to sound competitive because I'm very much for all the things that are out there that people can use to help themselves. And I really am sincerely, that's the way I feel. But most of those heart rate variability analysis don't tell you much. They're not giving you back any information about what it means. We have done it with millions of samples. We've been doing it. There's one ongoing study that's been happening right now. 1.8 million sessions have been analyzed.
Wow.
And so we're looking at, you know, what does this mean and what can it mean for a person in a practical way?
And so what are you detecting on your heart rate variability monitor?
Here's what's interesting. Looking at these 1.8 million samples, they're looking at what's called average coherence score. A person does a session, and after the session, it'll tell you your average score was, let's say, 2.3, you know, or 4.6 or 1.8. So you're looking at a score, you know, and it's really, you know, what was the average coherence level that you were in during your session? And they've looked at, again, this particular study, 1.8 million of these. And they showed a graph to me not long ago that blew my mind. Over this last year, I think they started this thing in like 2017 or something to today. You can see the coherence levels and the average scores increasing. They're going up.
Yay.
Now, there could be two primary reasons for that. One could be that the people are getting better at their practice. Okay, I'll give it that. Another could be that the world is actually becoming more coherent.
Yeah.
There's more coherence in the field. Now,
and
people could dispute me on that.
Monkey, you know, the 100th monkey concept?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're training a certain number of people and more people are getting
coherent. Yeah.
Of their
it's getting,
being more
getting
coherent.
Easier for them. Now, of course, that could be disputed saying, well, Howard, don't you watch the news? You know, can't you see what's going on in life and society? And yes, I see that. And I do see all the suffering and I see the chaos and the confusion and the polarization that's happening in the world today. You know, it's such a polarized world and all of that. And I observe that. Part of what I try to do in my work is to be in constant observation of the human condition. And I do see that. But at the same time, I also see underneath all that a momentum that's even bigger, that's moving us in the right direction. That there's such a strong desire for harmony and for connection in people. Many people have changed their beliefs. They're living differently. Their values are different. Their contributions to life have changed and are different.
Right.
Less self-centered, more looking at the benefit of others. All those things are happening simultaneously to what we're seeing portrayed so vividly in our news today. So I'm a believer in the beauty of the human spirit. I think that we are headed in the right direction. And ultimately, a better world is coming into focus for us. In the meantime, where I see the primary suffering going on in generally in people is that they are experiencing life in an unconscious state of chronic stress, meaning that people don't even realize it anymore. It's become the norm, right? And it's not the condition we were meant to live in. And it's a very unhealthy condition. I know you probably as a medical person would agree. And what's happened is we've adapted, you know, every perception that we have, Arlene, is accompanied by an emotional response. And so when we don't manage our emotions in regards to what we're actually seeing and perceiving, it adds up over time. Every time we're in a traffic jam and we get upset about it, every time we cut on the news and we get mad about the politicians that we're not into doing something that we think is bad, right? The conversations that we have, the conflicts that we have with others at work, or even just in life and picking up our dry cleaning, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And these triggers are happening all the time and people are experiencing these strong negative emotions. And after a while, our nervous system learns to be stressed. And we end up with nervous system chaos. And the nervous system stays in a state of chaos all the time and dysfunction. And people go to bed with their worries and concerns and replaying the negative events of the day. And they wake up and they do it again. And it goes into a continuous cycle. And people don't see it. That's all the bad news. The good news is a nervous system has learned stress, but it can also unlearn stress. It is very malleable. It can change. And as we do things, whether it's practicing heart coherence, our work or whether people are doing something else that's beneficial in ways that bring the system into balance, all that's fine. But just know, and I want you, the listeners, to know that you don't have to be in this constant state of stress all the time. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, I said earlier, we're going to have stresses. You know, it's about restoration.
Right.
And you can do it from the inside out. Matter of fact, you about have to. The external ways in which people try to reduce stress are okay. And I'm not down on them either. That is shopping. That is reading. Yeah. That is taking a walk in the park. And all that stuff's really important. And I think, you know, and I certainly do some of that. But ultimately, it finally has to be an inside out job. Right. We're not going to shop our way out of stress.
Yeah.
You know, we finally have to learn to regulate our emotions better. Your heart and the intelligence it provides can give you a greater ability to self-regulate your emotions. Mm-hmm. And there is one of the primary benefits of our work. And in doing so, you can cut that stress down a little bit. If people don't, ultimately it leads to what I will call medical stress.
Right.
To where your physical body is breaking down as a result of too much stress over too much time. And you probably see that in your work, mm-hmm. with people that come
Oh,
to
absolutely.
You.
Yeah. A big part of our jobs as chiropractors is to take people out of fight or flight and put them back into rest and digest, which is part of the process that you're working with heart coherence. And I would even venture to say that it's virtually impossible to be in heart coherence in fight or flight. When you're running from a lion on the savannah, it is not your time to be coherent. It's your time to survive, right?
That's right.
And if we can get back to rest and digest, that's the basis of where we can start working with this coherence, which is great. So
yeah, when we find out we have to have a car repair, is that the same thing as a lion chasing us through the savannah?
Right.
No, you know, but we respond the same way. And that's well documented. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of hardwired into us. But
yeah,
we are evolving. People are evolving and changing. And I think the ability to begin to perceive the events of life differently is available for everyone.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So we have a few more minutes. I'd like you to give us another story or two.
Another story or two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think the bigger story is what's most important. And it's like within the context of that, there are these transformations that individuals have happening all the time. And the amount of people that have told me, and I'm sure other people, other authors and speakers like myself hear similar things, but you know, how many times I've been told HeartMath changed my life, HeartMath saved my life. You know, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for you. You know, you have paved the way for, and they'll lay out some stuff, you know, and this goes on all the time. And I think the bigger story in all this is that there is a major transformation happening in people today, that we are in a period in history where more change is happening in less time than ever before in the history of humankind. And so individual transformation is happening for more people in short amounts of time today. The change that we see is creating chaos and confusion. So much change happening in such a short amount of time. But the individuals are changing as well. And they are really moving in a direction that represents something new and different. The stories that are most important to me would be ordinary people going through extraordinary change. Sometimes people ask me, well, who do you really admire? You know, who do you really admire the most? You know, if you could hang out with somebody for a day, who would it be? You know, and here's the honest truth of that. I admire a lot of people and have friendships with many people that have done extraordinary things. But the people that impress me the most are the person who would be like, let's say this, a single mother raising three children who has to work two jobs to get it done. Mm-hmm. And yet when she's at that job and she's interacting with someone like me, she has a smile on her face and an upbeat energy about her. Mm-hmm. And she's refusing to let the circumstances of her life take away her joy.
Mm-hmm.
That is my hero. That person is my hero because
Right.
they don't have, life isn't conforming to what they want. They don't necessarily have a support system. They may not have ever learned a technique or gotten an app or read a book or been to someone's seminar, but yet somehow or another they are in touch with their own heart and they are manifesting that and they are refusing to acquiesce to the stresses in the world today. That is my hero. And I've seen many of those people along the way. And I've seen them come to us as a result of that with that spirit because of our work. But I've also seen it plenty of times without that, you know. Another one that just came to me is watching how some of the younger people today are moving through life with a different flow. And it's the same thing, whether or not they've ever studied anything, most of them haven't. I remember a number of years ago being in Sweden and I was speaking over there, and the people that were had brought me in, they were a bit younger. They were, let's just say, their late 30s, you know. And they were, and we were going from city to city talking, and there was a snowstorm in one of those situations to where we had to move from, you know, one city to another, and it was two talks in the same day. And I'm thinking, this is, well, look, we got snow to deal with and all that. This is going to be a big mess, and I don't know if I'm going to get there on time and all that stuff, you know. And I'm doing
Right.
that, right? And yet they were like, no worries, we got it. There's a
Yeah.
flow to it, you know. And they were like reacting less to this whole thing. They were more into an acceptance mode. They were more into a flow. And as I observed this, I was going, you know, this is an example of new consciousness coming into the forefront
Yeah.
of how people are generally living their life. And it's not coming from any particular studies that they're doing. You know, it's not coming because they have learned some techniques that they're now all of a sudden practicing. There's something bigger in the air, so to speak.
Right.
You know, it's like the field environment's changed and they're accessing the field environment in a different way, and they are having less reactions to the normal events of life, you know.
Yes.
So that's a pretty generic story, but you know, it's I'm observing that in the world today, and I want you and your listeners to have that hopeful uplift that things are not as bad as they seem.
Right. Okay. So I want to thank you, Martin, Howard Martin, for having for coming in and talking to us about heart math, and for more information about the heart sensor and the app, as well as so much more valuable information about the power of heart coherence and heart math. You can go to heartmath.com, and I'll have that in the show notes. For you to take a look at. You can also email me at highlatitudehealthy@gmail.com for any more information. I'll have a whole bunch of information for you to share. And Dr. Mar Mr. Martin, any further information, just a quick last minute message for
Yeah.
our listeners.
I would like all the listeners to do one thing if you don't do anything else as a result of this call and this program. I want you to have compassion for yourself. Life's going to get tough at times, and we're going to feel a disappointment in ourselves and how we do and how we react and how we behave. At those moments in time, I want you to recognize that we are living in extraordinary times with lots of change, and that you're doing the very best you can. And when you feel a little down on yourself, as for whatever reason it is, try to find some compassion. Recognize it's not self-centered to do that. Have some compassion for yourself. And that's what
Great.
I wish for you.
Fantastic. You've been listening to High Latitude Healthy. I'm Dr. Eileen Karpfinger, a host, and here's to another great show. High Latitude Healthy and all the show notes can be found at wdrt.org. And as well on Spotify, YouTube, and on social media on Facebook, Instagram, and X. Find us and follow us to keep up with our interviews. And if you'd like to email Dr. Eileen, email her at highlatitudehealthy@gmail.com. Here's to living high latitude healthy.